A student uprising that began with young people refusing to accept the conditions imposed on their education ultimately became one of the defining turning points of South Africa's struggle against apartheid. But behind the images that history remembers were real young people, teenagers really, students, organizers, children carrying fear, conviction, but also anger and hope all at once. Today's guest was one of them. Seth Mazibuko was one of the youngest leaders associated with the Soweto uprising. He was arrested, detained, and forced to confront the machinery of apartheid while still incredibly young. His life became deeply intertwined with one of the most consequential youth movements in South African history. But this conversation is not a 50-year remembrance. It's also about asking what remains unresolved 50 years later. What happens to the ideals of a generation once the struggle becomes government? What does Seth Mazibuko see when he looks at the country now? You lived through a time, so between 1976 and 1990, this was not official policy. There was no official commemoration. Every year, the state rolled around that had such a significant impact on your life.
Yes. I sometimes, talk a lot about, and maybe this is what I'm going to mention also, that a lot of people do not understand that to some of us, we have not healed yet. We are still on that day, June 16, 1976, 50 years ago. And even going through the torture, the pain, the imprisonment at that age, 16, 17, and came out, we're still ahead. We're still, in Zulu you'll say Sasemanzi, and when every year there is this commemoration, some of us feel like we can block it, it must not happen, because it then opens up those wounds. And that is why sometimes some people think we're being personal about this day. And I also most of the time say to them, yes, we are. Because we are not telling a story. We're telling life things that happened to us. On the day, June 16, in the evening, Mama Winnie Mandela calls us as leaders. And then he says to us, look, guys, it was terrible during the day, blah, 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 blah. But can we go to Baragwanath Hospital just to find out how many children being hurt, which wards are they in, and underline wards are they in, and all of that. We ended up with few in the wards, more in the mortuary. So there were more children in the mortuary. Actually, we counted that year, that day, 188 corpses of children piled up. No more name tag, but number tag. And their school uniform, the black and white school uniform, the gray and white and all that was more red. And that is still playing in our heads and all that. And people do not realize that the pain of 1976 still lives with us. And I always tell people that Hector Peterson, Hastings Ndlovu, and many others could be grandfathers today. Maybe they could be having some heavy qualifications for themselves. And they're no more. And you then say, who is there to then take up the responsibility of having to protect? You know, I'm close to Antoinette Sithole, you know, the lady that is on the June 16 picture. And I see my closeness to her as a way of saying, I cost you this.
Really? You really? You think of it that way?
That's how deep it goes. Yes. And that's why I'm saying that I always have this guilt sometimes that says, you know, I led children out of the classrooms. Let me qualify this. I led black children out of the classrooms to be killed by white police.
If we just take a step back in remembering the work that led up to that day. For young people today, they are very interconnected. Everybody's got a cell phone, they've got WhatsApp, they in minutes. And I remember when we think about the Arab Spring a few years ago and how integral the interconnectivity of young people today was to that uprising. Leading up to the day, you guys had no cell phones. You had no WhatsApp. And you coordinated a township-wide and eventually nationwide.
And eventually continental.
Uprising. How did you get that right?
There's a need for us to also correct something. Amongst many young people, they just think the planning and everything was on the 13th of June. And then on the 16th of June, we're on the road. But I can tell you that the first boycott against Afrikaans as a medium of instruction happened in a school called Orlando West Junior Secondary, and where this piece of flesh was attending. And that, on the 30th of April, later on, the South African Student Movement, SASIM, which was a high school body of black consciousness movement, called a meeting at Vagasbreed. Now, that's the 24th of May. And SASIM then takes a decision in that meeting. It says, look, we are going to support these schools that are boycotting now. We're also joined by other schools. And not only did SASIM in that meeting take that decision only, it also took another decision, the boycott of South Africa, you know, sports, arts and culture, you know, the economic boycott sanctions, and all. They took a decision that now they're going to be enhancing that. Then SASIM appoints Zweli Sizane and then says, we are going to organize the meeting of the 13th of June. So by the time we come to the meeting of the 13th, there's already some interaction. And guess, that interaction in the SASIM meeting was not only Soweto that was represented there, it was also members of the SASIM executive that also came from different areas and provinces. At that time, they were not even called provinces. Yeah. But all I'm saying is that the other role that we sometimes ignore, as we are saying, how did you do this? It was not only that, you know, we had all, you know, amongst ourselves, but there's also another one. And again, as part of our program for this year, we are going to be telling that untold story. The story of journalists of 1976 and 77. That is why when the organizations were banned in 1977.
On that Black Tuesday.
On that Black Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that is why they targeted newspapers and the media at the time. Those were our spies. Those guys were not just writing for the sake of writing. They were writing, communicating also messages and what we are doing. And we don't tell the story. We don't ask, what did Duma Ndlovu, what did Duma Ndlovu play around that time? He used to drive a red Volkswagen. And what did Willy Bukala Kaba do? Tugwane, Sofitima, the list goes on. And when we tell the June 16th story, we miss that role played by media, but not social media. Pick up that. No. Social media is yours. We had a human media.
You had the gossip mill.
Yes. So a great deal of media people played that role. That is why we're acknowledging them as one of those untold stories. And we're also wanting them to engage with you, young people in the media.
That then always raises the question for me about the stories that are told, how they are told, and who benefits from a distortion of history. Why do you think so many of these stories have been allowed to die?
Is Robben Island still keeping prisoners? Because I might be going to Robben Island.
Well, there was a talk by a certain former president while campaigning of the type of people that would go to Robben Island.
Yeah. But no.
I don't think you would fall in that category.
Let me tell you, if you were to take, if I will agree to Robben Island being reopened, first prisoners to go to Robben Island are Trump's friends.
Okay.
Your question. That is why sometimes I feel many of us, not only I, many of us feel sold out by this democracy. We feel this is not what we fought for.
Really?
We feel CODESA 1, 2, 3 messed up with our struggle. We feel whilst CODESA came up through pressure from even us as 1976, leaders. But at the end of the day, CODESA compromised us.
In what way?
The simplest one was sunset clause. And those that accommodated, the thinking of CODESA and those speaking was, no, let's not treat them too hard, them whites. Let's rather sacrifice us as blacks, take some of the pain. Actually, the people are supposed to take more pain. It was supposed to be them. They're the ones who have been putting us through the fires. But let me tell you, we've made it comfortable for their conscience to live on as though they've done nothing. That is why they'll go to Trump even today. That is why they will refuse with the land. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to your question of distortions and misrepresentations. Who is sitting in government and leading is a person who, out of the stroke of a pen, can say June 21st of March is Sharpeville Day, purely Sharpeville Day, not Human Rights Day. But what does this person say? It is too black to be called Sharpeville Day. Let's call it human rights so that, whites can feel comfortable. Give you another one. Impi Yasesangweni, the battle of Sangweni, which speaks to also black victory. You know what we call it? Reconciliation Day, 16th of December. No, let's just hit it. Like, the very president of the country goes to Sangweni. And then the next thing, there's river running, the Blood River. That other side of the river are the Afrikaners with their memorial. And this side is us, African people. Then Thabo Mbeki comes up with a concept. Let's build a bridge, over so that we can link up and interact. You know what they did? They lock the side of the gate.
So that you're not touching.
Yeah. They lock the side of the gate. And the president last year, Reconciliation Day, was embarrassed. Mackenzie, the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, had to go and beg some Afrikaner that side to come and join the Reconciliation Day on this other side. Now, what am I saying? We compromised a lot. We even compromised our own history and heritage. We even compromised our values, you know.
So when you think about healing, because you earlier spoke about the fact that there's still a lot of pain. There's still a lot of blood, really, that's seeping through the wounds.
Yes.
What then do you believe the healing could look like? And what does it take to get there, to a place where we can, if we can, reconcile without compromise?
Let's look at this. If you compromise June 16, that means you're compromising me and my comrades. And how do I heal? Because I must be made to say, we want you to heal, and we are going to tell the story of 1976. We want the people of Sharpeville to heal. We want to tell the story of 1976. And there are all these that come up. And then you start even saying a basic part. We've got human rights. But these human rights, do they touch a gogo in Cape Town? Do they? I'm in Orlando East. I've never moved out. Okay. There are more Sheikhs than they were even under apartheid, if there were any under apartheid. A memorial site such as the Cape Town, the Freedom Charter.
Freedom Square.
Freedom Square. How are we treating it as black people? It's almost dilapidated. Mainly because we are not feeling that that is addressing our issues. I cannot be sitting somewhere hungry, somewhere in poverty, somewhere drinking myself to death because I'm avoiding poverty, and say to you, I'm healing. Actually, maybe I'm taking more wine to heal than I can even take. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Well, I drink 3 W's.
Mm-hmm.
Next time, I must organize this.
Okay, what are the 3 W's?
Water, wine, and whiskey. So,
but is
so if you want to get all the stories out,
yeah,
get the last W.
Get the whiskey. Well, I'll ask this question. You know, on the one hand, 50 years has passed, 32 of which have been in a new dispensation,
yes,
in a government that is nationally representative,
yes,
and a government that is for the people, by the people, essentially, because that's what we
for the people, I'm not too sure. Okay.
<about the democracy. laughs>
All right.
But also gives opportunity for everybody to participate.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Whether it is through elections, whether it's through civil society, but the opportunity to participate is there. And nobody is prevented from participating.
Mm.
Is it still a viable conversation to have that says we have compromised too much?
Mm-hmm.
We back then this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Should we not be standing here looking forward and saying, how do we fix
from here to there?
From here into the future.
I was saying to someone, I did not know that this would come from you. I was saying to someone, don't invite me in the national dialogue.
Wow. Why
but
not?
No, we'll be talking about exactly what we know is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing new that is going to come of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to take the national development plan and see how far did you go. To me, invite me when we are reviewing the Constitution, because I believe that Constitution is not promoting, protecting me. in full. It's the 30th anniversary of that constitution. Okay? It's the 50th of June 16. It's the 70th of women. That constitution came through not only the blood of young people, but also that much of our women in 1956. I'm saying, isn't it time? Because in any way, this was the principle that now the constitution was not a full constitution. It was supposed to be reviewed. Isn't it time?
And the constitution remains a live document.
Exactly. Isn't it it's about time to evaluate the constitution and see who is it supporting more than who? I was even saying this morning in another interview, we need to be taking the constitution as our centerpiece in that discussion. And then we then say, where do we come from? Look back. And as we're looking back and saying, what did we want to achieve during the course of our struggle? Is it there in that constitution? Is it there? Is it healing if it has got to? Is it healing that past? Is it serving the past? And it is out of that that we must also look outward. And at the moment, sorry, the opposite I'm saying. At the moment, as South Africans, we look too much outward than inward. Less of our problems here are less attended. We attend more international and all that, whilst our people are still in that same situation that they were in before. What I, going back, the 1976, I usually call June 16, the battle of the book versus the bullet. Coming out of it was blood. I usually said that. But the result of that blood, bullet plus the book, is that we can now use the ballot. Your point. I love those bees. But at the end of the day, after I've put my ballot on, what do I get? I get Madlanga. What do I get? I get Zondo. What do I get? I get how many cases as we speak are involving MPs, cabinet, and all that, including involving the president. Now, I'm getting worried. It shows that now we lost it somewhere. And you know,
is that about the ballot or about the people? Is that about the individuals who have stood up and put their hand up because they want their hand in the till?
Unfortunately, even our very electoral system in this country doesn't allow me to challenge Cyril. Cyril is representing a party. I don't choose Cyril. Cyril is chosen by his party. We don't elect individuals in this country. We don't elect people who are going to be accountable to us. We elect a party, and then the party gives us a person.
But I would challenge with the local elections coming up now that we have the opportunity to directly...
You don't have to challenge me. I'll tell you that I agree that is seeking to address exactly what we are complaining about. You understand?
So, but because I raise that in light of the evolution and flexibility of where we are and where the opportunities are, because I also want to ask you about who you see standing up to be like those youths that you were. You were 16 years old at the time.
Let me tell you, my sister.
Have we created an environment?
The system that we have, or the leaders we have and the parties that we have, you become so talkative like Seth, they'll ostracize you. They'll undermine you. They will, I'm telling you, my peers, if they were to be invited for this podcast, they will be having a car from Soweto to here. I hardly have a bicycle, never mind a horse.
But Seth, my question is slightly different. My question is about if in 1976, you and your peers, 16, 17, 18, 20, under such an oppressive regime, were able to organize and foment and be conscious enough to stand up for what you wanted, what you believed in, knowing full well that you would be facing bullets. What has changed that in today's environment?
That we can do the same.
We have not created young people where we are free. Young people do not feel the same sense of service, fire, any of those things. And as you say, the problems, they have the problems. They have the problems. They are unemployed. They are undereducated. They don't have access to this and that. And yet,
yeah,
they sit back.
Can I tell you? And I'm going to start back a bit. I always say this also. And when I speak, particularly about those who are my peers, I want to, I've said this in one of the hashtag Christmas fall recently. I said, on behalf of many, and there are many of us, I apologize to you, black children, black youth. I apologize profoundly. They'll say, what are you apologizing for, Mr. When 1994 came, we packed our bags. We dumped you. We left you all unattended. The only people who could attend to you are those that had drugs. And we ran away. We went to Parliament. We were BEE. And we never related. We never connected with you. And that is why we find young people today disconnected, as we are saying. It is because when they needed this connection, we were not there. Let's say it. And let's say it to our children that we've done you down, you know. And then must be starting to talk about how do we reconnect? How do we, you know, kumbulekai? You know, how do we?
And what ideas do you still have?
Can I tell you? Yes. One of the things that we're doing in our foundation, people find it naughty.
Naughty?
Yeah. No, not your naughty girl. No. We've been moving around provinces, institutions of higher learning, high schools and all that. We have what we call, and this is why we even agree to these podcasts and all that, because we regard them as forming part of our program called Courageous Conversations for Courageous Activism.
Wow.
We have stopped those courageous conversations that then incites us to courageous activism. Young people are no more active. And part of the coming of the component of this activism is that when you go for these elections now, okay, don't just be a young person that is going to participate and be involved. Add another one. Lead. Let's have a young ethical leader. Most of the time we call for you to come and participate. I vote. But we don't, young people would never vote for another young person. It's time that young people should not only be asked to be involved and should not only be asked to be participating, but also asked lead and be engaged on what is that we expect from a young leader. And who is this guy who went to this commission?
Which one? There are so many. Which commission?
Okay. So we are no more fighting your other side. Yeah. The Madlanga.
Okay.
I was very disappointed
about which guy?
The guy, the young one, Mpumalanga.
Oh, the CFO.
Yes,
the CFO.
Yes. Very stylish, very English, and very car and cars. Yeah? Now, that's another thing that I say, look at this. Now, this guy was co-opted into crime and corruption.
Process the provocation.
Let me give you the last one. During the FISMAS fall, there was a very powerful girl. Don't ask me to give the name. Very powerful girl. And I used to sit with her sometimes in interviews. She was co-opted into some political party.
She was always in the political party. Yeah, she was in the student chapter of the party.
Yeah. She was in the office. She was taken into the office. Don't ask me to give the name of the office. But she was taken
We're on a podcast. You're amongst friends. It's just me and you.
And after that, I think
we all know.
We all know. Mm. And that same person, okay, is in parliament. The very issues of students that she was loud about, they're being silenced.
Brother, I hear you. I appreciate the idea of provoking young people to say they must step in and step forward. But a provocation from me to you. Young people aren't going to listen to you, right? They're like, this old timer. You know, he had his time, he had his...
affiliate.
But you mentioned earlier that when freedom came, when the changeover came, you abdicated a responsibility that still was there. Mm. And my provocation to you is to say, where are the parents and the role that they must play? Where are the old people, your peers, who, not just the BC guys, I think all along you spoke about the role the journalists played. Those were old people. You guys were just students and kids. Those were old people that were supporting your movement, that were supporting what you were doing in their spaces. The provocation for me, for you, is to say you still have an opportunity to talk to your peers, to recalibrate themselves and what they look like and how they show up so young people still have role models.
I'm scared. No, I'm being serious. That's what I was saying to you, that I'm ostracized enough because I say it as it is and I get isolated, I get undermined. But having said that, there's one point that I wanted to clarify with you. The students of 1976, they were also doing whatever they were doing under serious pressures from their parents. Don't forget. Our parents that time, they were given this, that now if you get in politics, you'll get to, you'll be like Mandela, life. But we took that decision when our parents were saying we can't. And I still believe that the youth today can still take a decision despite being ignored or being co-opted. The engagement should be two ways. It should be an engagement that says, come, you guys that were my, let's go to these kids and say sorry, and then let's get them back and say, but we must not just say sorry. We must be able to say to them, we failed you, because that's what we're not telling you guys. We're not telling young people these things. We failed you here, here, here. We're not. We only talk about these things when we are having the three W's. You know what I mean? And then we say, hey, we failed these kids. And don't think that we don't know. And we say it, that we failed our children. And we have not yet discussed how do we bring you back. And that is why in our conversations, and you forget that we're also born out of heavy conversations from Black consciousness, you know, Black men, you are on your own. And those generated a lot of thinking. But what is more important, and Steve spoke more of, you know, psychological liberation, which I still believe we need, even now. Mm-hmm. And younger people still need. And it's not... from where we're coming from, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a microwave process. You know, it is going to be a process that we have to have either a campaign or a project that is deliberate about what it is seeking to achieve, the reconnection with our own.